It's my pleasure to welcome you to our annual presentation. Before we commence proceedings, I would like to say two things. First, I should like to say thank you to Jonathan Lay. Jonathan gets very embarrassed when I do this, but he has been chief executive of this company since it was formed in 1986 and chief executive of a public company since 1987. Although he's been helped by many other people, he has been very instrumental in creating the growth which has occurred in the last 25 years. I would like you to show your appreciation on behalf of your shareholders for what he's done. Brown Bickle, chief executive now, finance director for the last 25 years. We welcome him to his new position. And we have now appointed a new finance director, Chris Ward, who's sitting in the front row. You can stand up and show your face so he can recognize you in future. So the team is complete, and I'm very glad to say that Jonathan, of course, has stayed on the board as deputy chairman. It really is a pleasure to have him. Well, that's enough for me. I think we've had a successful year, I hope you agree. And I'll ask Brown to start the proceedings. Brown.
Thank you, John. And good morning to you all. Thank you for coming along today. The format of the presentation this morning, I shall run through the results and highlights. Simon and Tom will talk about the activity in our villages. We'll then talk about our results in a little bit more detail. And then we'll have a chance to answer questions at the end of our presentation. And that will be finally followed by questions from those who are listening on the dial-in. One thing I would say is that you will all avoid considerable personal embarrassment if you actually put your phones on silent at this point. It will avoid the audience staring at you when your phone goes off. If we can turn to page one of the presentation, which we'll be following today. We have some background here about Shaftesbury. You all know us terribly well. As you know, we invest in the centre of the West End of London. It's a very historic area. Our street patterns were all laid out by the early 1700s. So it's important to remember that these investments in this city has been around a long, long time. It's very historic. It attracts millions of people. It's a global city, fifth largest city by GDP in the world, largest city in Europe, more shops and restaurants than any other city. So it's been around a long, long time. We sometimes forget that how long it's been going. And actually, somebody once said some very wise words about London, probably over 250 years ago. The famous Mr. Samuel Johnson, Dr. Johnson. We should all remember 250 years ago, he thought, when a man is tired of London, he is tired of life. For there is in London all that life can afford, and that's why people came here 250 years ago, and that's why they still come here. Very interestingly, Dr. Johnson and his colleagues used to meet at 9 Gerrard Street for their literary evenings. 9 Gerrard Street is obviously a Shaftesbury property, which is why I mention it. It was known as the Turk's Head Pub 250 years ago. It's now the Yu Loon Moon Chinese Supermarket. I suspect it'll be around in another 250 years, but probably not as the supermarket. So this is why we invest in these areas. They are traditionally very busy, they're very resilient, and obviously our holdings are quite extensive now. We have in the wholly owned portfolio 12.5 acres of freeholds, with this focus on shopping and restaurants, which is really what the West End is all about. We have another 1.9 acres in our Long Martin joint venture, again with similar mixed uses. And of course you see in front of you a management team that is very, very long established. I think between our three of us sitting here today, we've got over 72 years of service with Shaftesbury. So this business is all about consistency, a consistent strategy and consistent management. If we can move on to page two, without going through this page in detail, you'll be very aware of our strategy. We are detail obsessed at Shaftesbury. This is a building that consists of over 500 properties, over 800 commercial tenants, 389 flats. So this is all about detail, and it's a strategy that focuses on detail. You'll be pleased to know the new chief executive is not about to change this strategy. It's been very successful, it's very resilient. Why would we want to change? But it's important you understand that the implementation of this strategy changes all the time. This company is all about change. We evolve and adapt through changing conditions and probably more importantly, changing tastes, whether they're tastes of our tenants or tastes of their customers. You could say we're in the fashion business. Retail is fashion, and actually these days food is fashion. In fashion, nothing stands still, and Shaftesbury certainly doesn't. So we're always looking for new ideas, new retailers, new trends. That's what we're about, because the West End has to stay ahead of the game. Moving on to page 3 and the results highlights. You'll all had a chance to study the results this morning since they came out, but the key points here are this very good growth in net rental income we've seen over this 12-month period. Our net property income is up over 15%, and it's a combination of the completion of our Long Martin scheme, which is now fully let, where we've been working on that for a number of years. But we've also seen good growth in our wholly owned portfolio, with like-for-like rents up 7.5% over a 12-month period. Now, that's above our long-term average, which is probably around 3 to 4%, but it gives you some sense of the strength of the West End and the degree of occupancy in our portfolio as well. We have very, very little to let, and that continues. So, as a consequence of good rising income, our profits are up 31% at just under $29 million. And reflecting our valuation, you've seen our net asset value go up just under 12%, so we now stand at £4.63. We have a track record of increasing our dividends, and you'll see the final dividend is up 9.5% to 5.75p, bringing dividends for the year up just over 10%. Obviously, we had our equity issue earlier in the year, which has increased the number of shares in issue, so our total distribution to our shareholders this year is up 21%. Turning on to page 4 and our performance summary, well, our portfolio is valued now at just under £1.68 billion, and we've seen a capital value uplift this year of just over 7%, which compares with the IPD or property index of 1.7%. Values this year have been driven by rising rents and ERVs. We've seen some yield compression, but it's been pretty marginal. 17 basis points in the wholly owned portfolio and 18 basis points in Long Martin. The most important, well, an important aspect of capital uplift is actually what you spend on your properties to achieve this growth. And you will see we have a consistent trend of having a very low capex spend on this portfolio thanks to its focus on shops and restaurants. So even this year, a quite busy year for us, our capital expenditure only amounted to 0.8 of 1% of the market value of our wholly owned portfolio. In terms of total return, which obviously includes income from our portfolio, we produced a return of 11.3% against the IPD of 8.7%. And overall for the company, our net asset value return before dividends was just a touch over 14%. Share prices, as you all will be aware in this room, has performed very well this year, and we've seen a total shareholder return of exactly 10%. Against the FTSE 350 index, which I think is down 0.4% over the year. We're now going to move on to a review of our village activity. We have a map on page 5 which shows you the concentrations of our ownership in our key locations. You are looking at this map in the wholly owned of 12.5 acres of freeholds. That includes over 300 shops, over 200 restaurants, bars and cafes, over 400,000 square feet of offices and nearly 400 apartments. In addition to that, we have just under 2 acres in the joint venture with a similar mix of shops and restaurants. So these are absolutely core locations in the heart of the busiest part of London, and we don't intend to stray from our core strategy. The general features we see in the West End, which you'll see on page 6, is prosperity. We have good visitor numbers, good spending throughout our locations. Demand has been excellent throughout the year and actually continues to be good. We're still doing lettings despite the gloom and doom you see around you today. We've maintained extremely high levels of occupancy throughout the year, never more than 3% of our ERV available to let at any one time. And importantly, things turn over very, very quickly at Shaftesbury. Things have not sat empty during the year. Even in our residential, it's quite amazing. Every time we add up the number of vacant flats, and bear in mind we've got nearly 400 of them, we never have more than half a dozen at any one time. I think it was 3 the other day when we did it. And as we sit here today, those 3 flats will not be the same. They'll have been let by now. It's always tough to buy in our markets in the West End. You can understand why with this sort of prosperity. But we've got acquisitions of nearly £65 million this year, which Simon and Tom will talk about. And we have a number of other things we're looking at. As you know, Shaftesbury acquisitions are always unpredictable and opportunistic. I can guarantee that next week we'll be looking at something that we have no knowledge of at the moment. And lots of new schemes within the portfolio. There's a particular demand for larger shops and restaurants, and we seek to try and satisfy that demand. What we also benefit from at Shaftesbury is substantial investment in the public realm in these areas, particularly ahead of 2012 next year. You're seeing streets being improved, terribly disruptive at the moment for the short term, but huge long-term benefit. And then, of course, we all look forward in a few years' time to Crossrail getting going, new stations being open, which will make the West End much more accessible for lots more people. So at this point, I'd like to hand over to Simon, who's going to talk about Carnaby.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, everybody. As Brian has mentioned, we have had experienced exceptional demand throughout the whole of the Carnaby Village throughout the year, across all sectors, retail, restaurant, office and residential. Demand has been especially strong for our retail and restaurant units throughout the whole 12 streets, and it's important to remember Carnaby is not just Carnaby Street, but it's all the surrounding streets as well, where we can provide a whole mix of retail restaurant units, different sizes and different rental levels. There's particularly strong demand for our larger retail units, again as Brian mentioned previously, and that's something that we're looking to achieve throughout Carnaby over the coming years. We have completed the retail element of our development at 36 to 39 Carnaby Street, and we have now let those two units, which comprise 9,500 square feet, to new Swedish brands to the UK. One's called Monkey and one is called Cheap Monday. These are actually within the umbrella of Hennes & Mauritz H&M, so we've also got a very good covenant strength with those two units. The headline Zone A rent for those units is £430 per square foot, and that actually compares with this time last year when we were talking about a headline rent of £400 per square foot. People sometimes ask us why do new concepts want to locate in Carnaby, and in fact these are the first standalone stores for these two units, and I thought the best thing would be to read out part of the press release from the Chief Operating Officer of Monkey. He says, "This location is no less than perfect for Monkey, and we are perfect for Carnaby Street. Everything that the area stands for, the feeling, the fashion level, the ideas, it is so Monkey. Carnaby Street is a place for strong, creative brands and exciting design. This is our crowd." I couldn't have said it better. The office element of the development we're about to complete imminently. And indeed we've got very strong demand for that space. This is very good cafe space, and indeed just yesterday we put one of the floors under offer. Generally, office demand in Carnaby is very strong, particularly from our traditional users, which is in the creative industries and the fashion industries, and we see that that's going to continue. We have submitted a planning application for what we call phase two of the original Carnaby Street scheme, which is a mixed-use development at 2225 Kingley Street and 14 to 18 Fubert's Place. And this is a complete mix of uses. We're going to create retail and residential use on Fubert's Place and restaurant, office and residential uses in Kingley Street. And we anticipate getting planning consent for that scheme either at the end of this year or beginning of next year. And if we do get planning consent, then we anticipate that the scheme will start towards the end of next year. This will enable us to create large retail units on Fubert's Place. We'll be creating approximately 10,000 square feet there. And if you look at Fubert's Place rentals, which are currently around about £240 a square foot, and compare that with Carnaby Street, we see there's really good potential for growth in Fubert's Place, which is actually one of the busiest streets in Carnaby and the most important entrance coming in from Regent Street. We've recently obtained planning consent for a conversion of the lower part of Lazenby House from office and ancillary space into retail space, and this will enable us to again link through into our Fubert's Place units to create large units, again approximately 10,000 square feet here. And importantly, these units will have a reverse frontage onto Little Marlborough Street, which is part of which the Liberty department store backs onto. And Liberty themselves have actually made an application to open up the rear of Liberty onto Little Marlborough Street. We mentioned, Brian again mentioned about Public Realm. We talked last year about the works being carried out to Kingly Street. The resurfacing works and pedestrianisation have now been completed. And as we anticipated, this has resulted in significantly increased pedestrian flow. And then as a result of that, great demand from restaurants to this location. And again, interestingly, we had a conversation with the Crown just the other week, and they are talking to some of their retailers about the possibility of opening up onto Kingly Street. So again, that sort of further enhances the street. We've got further works which are being carried out in Ganton Street, west of Carnaby Street at the moment, which will be completed in the new year, and further works in Ganton Street to the east of Carnaby Street, which are going to commence in the new year. So again, that's furthering this public realm enhancement. Brian again mentioned briefly about residential. We continue to seek opportunities to convert smaller office suites into residential units. We will only do that where relevant, but we do see that there are further opportunities.
Tom, would you like to talk about Covent Garden, which you'll see is summarised on page 8 of the presentation?
Good morning. Covent Garden is our largest investment district, now valued at over £600 million, including our share in the joint venture. This year, the sort of driver of our growth has been rental value improvement in our restaurants, which are in short supply. Demand is exceptionally strong. In Covent Garden, our wholly owned restaurants actually produce a third of our income, and we have, of course, another 8 units within the joint venture. When it comes to restaurants, we are just as obsessed about tenant mix and about the quality of the operation as we are with our retail. And so in the Opera Quarter, recently we've been pleased to welcome Mishkins as the latest addition to our stable. And if you haven't heard of Mishkins, and please don't feel embarrassed, because it has only just opened a week ago, but this is the latest offering from the people who've given us Polpo and Cupertino in Soho. The way they describe it is sort of New York Jewish deli with cocktails, and I strongly recommend that you go and try this one. Retail rents largely unchanged since March, but demand very steady, and as you've heard, in common with the rest of the portfolio, vacancies are currently as low as we have ever experienced. Residential has also performed very well in Covent Garden, where in fact we have over 40% of our apartments in the wholly owned portfolio, plus of course another 75 in our joint venture. We are continuing with our policy of converting poorer quality small offices to residential. Many of our buildings lend themselves to that sort of configuration and use, and we've got more schemes planned. Over the course of the year, we've made some really good purchases in absolutely core areas. £25.4 million, which we've spent on 4 restaurants, 4 shops, and 2 office buildings. We've already reconfigured 2 of the shops, and in fact those are now under offer, and we're looking at opportunities to introduce more valuable uses with the retail and restaurants in the offices, which extend to about 10,000 square feet. As you know, public realm improvements are a very important element of our strategy, and we're very pleased that this week Westminster Council have started work on Mercer Street. This is the street which is immediately to the east of our joint venture site, quite an important street also for Seven Dials, as it runs directly north into the heart of Seven Dials. And this is going to be an improved surface, a level shared surface, in much the same sort of specification that we've seen in Kingly Street. We expect that to benefit our holdings quite considerably. We're also very pleased that Westminster don't seem to have run out of money quite yet, and in fact are now advancing plans to carry out improvements in Cranbourne Street, which is a very important pedestrian link from Leicester Square into Covent Garden. And these works, which are out for consultation at the moment, and we're currently engaged in that process with Westminster, these are set to be completed before the Olympics, and effectively will deliver people directly from Leicester Square to the entrance of the joint venture. Just moving on to the joint venture, You've heard, obviously, that the St Martin's Courtyard development was completed in April and is now making a very important contribution to our profits. But we are also now looking at new projects within the joint venture site. So we've got a scheme on site at the moment to refurbish around 10,000 square feet of offices, and we're also about to commence a rolling program of refurbishment of a rather old, outdated block of flats fronting Mercer Street.
Thank you, Tom. Perhaps you could now turn to page 9 and we can talk about Chinatown.
Chinatown makes up almost a quarter of our holdings, and it is the most centrally located restaurant and leisure district in the West End. Chinatown is all about restaurants. In fact, restaurants deliver 63% of our income. We're fully let, and while this year we've seen no open market evidence in Gerrard Street, the area has benefited from growth in both Wardour Street and Lyle Street. Acquisitions of $18.5 million. Again, core acquisitions, 5 restaurants and 1 shop. Unusually, one of the restaurants we acquired vacant. We acquired it from a retiring owner-occupier. We were actually able to pre-let that during the course of its refurbishment. We often benefit in our locations from considerable investment by our neighbours and by the local authority. And Westminster Council's £15 million makeover of Leicester Square is now well advanced and set to benefit Chinatown. 2012 will also see the reopening of the London Hippodrome, the eastern gateway to Chinatown. And this will be an important new leisure and entertainment venue.
Thank you, Tom. Simon, Soho.
Soho and Charlotte Street, whilst representing quite a low proportion of our capital value, are actually very important in our long-term strategy for Shaftesbury. We see great good potential in these locations. In Soho, we have concentrated previously our acquisition in Berwick Street, but we've actually widened the net a little bit in the course of the year into some of the adjoining streets. And when you look at your pack later, you'll be able to see some of those properties. And we've actually acquired 8 properties during the course of the year at a value of $16.6 million, and these represent 5 shop units and 3 restaurants. We keep on saying we've got lots of demand. We have incredible demand for units in Berwick Street. We feel it's very important that we maintain the traditional mix. Berwick Street is quite often referred to as Soho's local high street, and we really see that we should sort of maintain and enhance that mix rather than trying to change the identity. We are very encouraged by other activity which is going to take place in the area. At long last, Trenchard House appears that it's going to be redeveloped, which will be a mix of social housing, private housing and commercial elements fronting onto Broadwick Street. This is something which we anticipate will happen in the near future. Walker's Court is a proposal that Soho State have, and it's an important link between the bottom end of Berwick Street and the route through to Shaftesbury Avenue, and we know that they're about to submit a planning application for that scheme. And Kemp House, we referred to this last year, we made a bid for Kemp House, but unfortunately were unsuccessful for what actually ended up to be quite an unconventional short leasehold interest on a highly geared basis. We understand that we have not been successful, but what will actually happen there is that the building will be redeveloped in some form, and there will be extensive expenditure in the public realm and facilities to the market. So even though it appears that we're not involved in that project, the works that will be carried out will be of benefit to our holdings. And you know, we maintain the idea that this area is something where we're going to see good growth. Charlotte Street, again, we've sort of invested in the surrounding streets to Charlotte Street. We've only managed to buy a few properties in the course of the year, but we are looking at a number of others. Again, we're very encouraged by the fact that the Middlesex Hospital will be redeveloped, the post office site in in Newman Street, where they're seeking to put a link through into Charlotte Street, and of course Crossrail, which will not only benefit this area but of course will also benefit our Berwick Street holdings with the new entrance to Tottenham Court Road in Dean Street.
Thank you, Simon. We can now move on to page 11. I don't propose to spend a huge amount of time talking about the financials. I'm sure you've all trawled through them at considerable length this morning. But moving on to page 11, just summarising our rental income for the year. You'll see in the wholly owned portfolio, our rents receivable were up some 12%, and the group share of Long Martin, well, this reflects the fact that the courtyard has become pretty much fully let during the year. But there is still more rental income, rental growth to come from there, because we actually haven't had a full year's income from the tenants who are now in situ. As we keep saying, we see good demand for all uses and across all of our villages, and that's carried on throughout the year. Very low level of voids being turned over very quickly when they become empty, and that continues as we speak today. The prosperity of the West End is reflected in our very low level of tenant defaults. We've got a bad debt charge of just £0.3 million out of an income of, as you can see, of £75 million, so it's pretty negligible. And I have to say, not all tenants prosper, you know, they do have issues, but actually we're able to move very quickly. We don't need to nurse people along because we have more demand we can satisfy. We encourage those who are struggling to move on, whether it be to smaller units with us or just to leave the area completely. We don't have to be defensive in our location. Page 12, property outgoings. There is an increase this year, obviously running a public courtyard like St Martin's Courtyard and the start-up costs do incur some costs for us. We see a continuing trend with our smaller shops and apartments of bearing an increasing share of non-recoverable costs. That's just a fact of life these days. The important thing with the apartments is they produce good steady income for us. In terms of outgoings, well, obviously you've heard Simon and Tom talk about schemes we have in hand. Those create voids in our income, some short-term costs, and being the conservative sort of people we are, we charge all those against income. So sometimes more activities creates more costs in the short term. And of course, if things do become difficult in the period ahead, trading, you don't see it at the moment, we do spend more on marketing and promoting our villages. And that's just not for visitors, but it's also to attract more tenants. It's very important in the world that we work in that tenants see you investing your money alongside theirs and promoting these destinations. We can't leave it all to the tenants. Even so, we've seen our net property revenue go up just under 16% this year, so just under 67 million. Page 13, our general sort of corporate expenses. Admin expenses up. Just about 1.4 million extra bonuses for the directors and staff. And we are a growing business. You know, we are employing some more staff. You know, we're not massive. As you know, there are only 19 of us at the moment, and to take on two new people is rather radical, and that doesn't include our new UFD, so you could say it's three. But we want to make sure we've got the resources to carry on expanding the business and, again, deal with whatever the future holds in store for us all. Interest payable has been pretty static this year. Interest rates haven't changed very much. And obviously, during the year, we had the benefit of our proceeds of our share placing in March, which reduced our short-term debt levels by some £100 million. The only tax you see in the profit and loss account is in Long Martin, which is outside of our REIT group. Page 14 just summarises earnings and dividends. I think that when we talked to you this time last year, the dividend was not covered by adjusted earnings, but it certainly is now. We're moving on quite smartly, and we'd expect it to be so in the future. So this year, our dividends per share are up just under 10%. And as I said earlier, our total distribution, reflecting more shares in issue, is up some 21%. We expect to maintain a steady growth in our dividends. It obviously all depends on profits and rental income, but we are confident that we should see a growing stream of income to our shareholders. Page 15 and balance sheet. Net asset value now stands at £4.63 per share, which is up just under 12% over the year. And we are conservatively geared, unashamedly so. We think it's an appropriate position to be in for a REIT such as Shaftesbury. We are focused on income, so we think high levels of gearing are not appropriate for us. 16 finance. Not a great deal of change here in terms of our borrowing structure. Still 575 million committed. £140 million available for drawing to us at the moment. Some very low margins on our money. And we have to be realistic about that. We will be faced with renegotiating facilities over the next couple of years. Nothing has to be done immediately. But obviously the cost of money today is somewhat above the 104 basis points we will pay on our existing facilities as we sit here today. So no maturities before 2016, but obviously it's important to deal with those in advance of that date. So we do have discussions with our lenders about how we could restructure what we have at the moment. Everybody has to come to terms with a world where finance is scarce and will cost more. Availability, having the money available is an absolutely key thing for us. We have hedging in place on some 360 million of our floating rate debt. Long swaps, long dated swaps, which match our long-term investment strategy. We think that's appropriate. It's been extremely volatile during the period. We saw the mark-to-market deficit come down £37 million in the first 6 months of the year, only to go up by £61 million in the second half of the year. So it is it's an accounting provision. It is very volatile, and over the long term, interest rates will start to creep back to what we consider to be their historic norm. Long Martin joint venture, still no external debt here, so uncharged assets. You can imagine that lots of people in the debt markets these days find our assets very interesting because they are actually long-term assets. You can safely lend against them for 15 or 20 years, and actually they're not going to wear out. They're not going to be like a shopping centre or an office building, which they will change very dramatically over that period of time. Our assets are very secure, so you'd expect they do attract a lot of interest from the truly long-term lenders of 15, 20, 25-year maturity. Our current debts at the moment, I'd say our margins are very low and short-term interest rates are very low. We're still able to borrow at one-month LIBOR rates with our existing facilities. So our marginal cost of debt is somewhat below 1.75% at the moment. Finally, on page 17, looking ahead, well, in the short term, we have lots of big things happening in London next year, the Olympics, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations. We do know that these events are going to attract huge numbers of people, and there will be some disruption to what we've termed normal patterns of activity in the West End. Lots of people will come and others will choose not to come next year. I think as we speak today, Boris Johnson is giving a press conference which is all about London still being open for business next year. It will be busy, it will be different people. We're not quite sure what the short-term impact of all these things is going to be, but come September next year, life will have settled down, people's patterns will return to normal, and we shall have a legacy of huge investment in schemes across the West End of London, which would not, I'm sure, have ever been done had it not been for the Olympics. As I said before, we have continuing strong demand across the portfolio, and we don't know the implications of all the global problems and the things that were talked about in the press today in Mr. Osborne's statement. I don't think anybody knows. All we do know is this strategy came out of some very difficult times in the early 90s. I remember a world of interest rates at 15% and people still got by. People do find a way through these problems and people will still come to the West End. People will still come to London, that we're sure. You'll see the portfolio reversion is still growing. It's up 10.5% this year. We start from a very low base. That's obviously part of the Shaftesbury strategy, and we make something out of nothing. So we're confident we can carry on finding these slightly run-down, forgotten-about areas and bring greater income over time. It doesn't happen overnight, but crikey, if you sit it out and stick at it, it certainly comes through. We've got substantial bank facilities, over £140 million available, and it's not unusual that in very unsettled conditions we find more product coming to the market. Again, you could say, well, these assets in the West End are so great, why would anybody ever sell them? Well, actually, people do have to sell them. It's very important we're there with our resources to actually snap them up as they come past. As I said before, the huge investment in central London, projects like Crossrail, great catalysts for regeneration. We stick to the busiest parts of town. We're not going to go anywhere else, and we do have great local knowledge. But at the end of all of this, I would say we don't take West End for granted. We're not complacent. Times will be tougher and tougher for some time to come, so we remain alert to the challenges, but we think we're well placed to see things through. I think I ought to give the last word to Dr. Johnson again, who's possibly knew our areas even better than we do. His words, possibly written in the Turk's Head pub, we don't know. Sir, if you wish to have just a notion of the magnitude of this city, you must not be satisfied with seeing its great streets and squares, but must survey the innumerable little lanes and courts. It is not in the showy evolutions of building, but in the multiplicity of human habitations which are crowded together that the wonderful immensity of London consists. And actually hearing those words, I wonder if he ever did the Shaftesbury tour. Maybe that's what he's like. So thank you very much, everybody. We'd like to take questions firstly from the floor. And then we'll move on to those people who are listening on the dial-in. If you do have a question, could you please only use the microphone, otherwise it's not picked up. Could you say your name and the company you're representing, please, quite clearly for those who are not in the room.
Good morning, Ben Richford from Green Street. Just a question or two on residential. It seems to have been a strong performance for you this year. Just firstly, if I can just ask, does it make sense to sell in any of the residential, maybe down at the Opera Court in particular? And then secondly, you've identified 90 schemes for conversion to residential. Could you give us an indication of the value uplift from that?
Well, certainly selling residential is something we're often asked about. Yes, these properties do have very high capital values, but in our experience, we have to maintain flexibility, not just in individual buildings, but across our holdings as a whole. If you imagine our buildings are generally small, domestic size, most of our flats sit at the top above shops and restaurants, which is our key investment focus. That's where the bulk of the value is for Shaftesbury. In our experience, you generally don't want some person coming along spending perhaps £500,000 or more on his flat at the top of your building, because inevitably he or she will prevent you doing all the things you really want to do to that building, to maybe extend the retail, extend the restaurant. And of course, being a local resident, he'll have the ear of the local council. So if you want to try and do the same thing next door or across the street, he'll object. And his voice carries far more weight than the owner. So yes, we are able to, in some situations, sell properties, sell residential, but actually you have to look at the long-term impact. We're not short-term people here. Yes, we could have a short-term kick from selling residential. In the long term, we think in terms of management flexibility, it would cost shareholders a great deal of money. Tom, you look after a lot of our residential. Where do you see the uplift coming from our scheme?
The differential from office values is quite material. I mean, as Brian was saying, the configuration of our properties, bearing in mind they were property houses originally, ideal. We don't necessarily need to extend the envelope. It is the use change. So actually, the amount of money that we spend relatively is quite low. It's actually obtaining that planning consent which adds most of the value. And I guess we spend perhaps £200 a foot on converting some of our flats, possibly less. We do produce a really quite a good standard of accommodation. It's very durable, with good quality, and then we don't have to suffer the obsolescence.
As Tom was saying, it's very much about income for our residential. We don't do it because we love having residential. These are great income machines for us. These flats are never empty. Tenants come and go. There are no rent-free periods. Very little obsolescence if you do have flats with good standards. I have to say a lot of people who live in our flats look as though they never ever use the kitchen. You still have the labels on your appliances after 3 years, but with so many restaurants around you, why would you want to bother cooking? And it actually brings buzz and activity to people actually living in our villages. You know, you sell off residential these days, you can create some rather barren areas. There's so much residential in central London, those overseas people who don't actually live here, not part of the community. Those who do choose to rent out flats live, work and shop here. They live their whole lives in these areas, which is what we like about
them. Very good, thank you. And just another question. You achieved very good like-for-like of 7.5% in the year. I'm just thinking ahead to next year, where we see the Olympic Games, as you've identified, overseas shoppers spending a lot in London, but the domestic shopper is struggling a little bit. Could you give us a sense of your expectation for like for next year?
Well, I always think everything trends towards the average in this life. We're not expecting bad. I mean, Simon, you see the demand for retail. How do you see it?
The demand for retail, the good thing for our demand for retail, both from the retailer's point of view and the customer's point of view, is we've got such a variety of people demanding space and shopping in our shops. We've got the London shopper, we've got the national shopper, we've got the shopper that jumps on the Eurostar and comes across and for further afield. So there will be certain sectors of the market which will decline, but we think that the other sectors will benefit.
And then just finally, you've got a swap position that is quite large as a sort of 10% mark to market as a percentage of your net asset value. Mm-hmm. Could you just give us a little more interpretation as to what you think that means?
Well, obviously we're in a very different interest rate environment when those swaps are taken out. Again, whether this environment continues is anybody's guess. The swaps actually run with the facilities, so we're not obliged to settle any of the swaps early or anything like that. This is an accounting adjustment to say that its volatility is incredible, to move around something so substantially during a 12-month period. I think in this uncertain world, it's very hard to predict where interest rates are going to be. I mean, you can only have to start seeing its credit rating change, and actually all of a sudden interest rates can move. So I think it's an accounting adjustment. I'm afraid it's what my profession has tested. I call it snapshot accounting. It changes from day to day. You get hung up on the results of one day. You have to look at the long term. You know, is this interest rate environment going to continue? We just don't know.
Thank you.
The next question from the floor.
Who's going next? No fighting.
Then I'll do it. Bernstein, Merrill Lynch. Two questions. Any reason to think that the parking regulation or restrictions that are now being proposed by Westminster Council are going to affect your business some way or somewhere?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's obviously very topical at the moment, parking in the West End. The Westminster Council have put in place plans to start in January to charge at a reduced rate for parking after 6:30 on weekday evenings up till midnight, and then I believe it's 1 till 6. Or 1 till 5 on a Sunday afternoon, whereas up to now parking has been free and you can park on the yellow line. I think our view here is that really in this current climate it's not very helpful to bring in new arrangements which in any way discourage people from coming and spending their time in the West End. Yes, lots of people do, but they don't take it for granted, and there's no reason to make it more difficult than it has to be. But in practice, I think if you look at the demographics of our customer base, most of those people will be public transport focused, whether it's people coming into town shopping for the day or all the tourists that come into our areas. Obviously, tourists don't generally drive to London, don't have cars. They're walking about every day and encourage that with our street scheme. So it's a mix. We shouldn't have to wait and see, really, but we think probably we're less affected than other people in the West End.
Second question. You've got all your different villages. Some of them have actually seen very little investment in terms of new acquisitions in recent years. Should we read anything into that they're being sort of, that they're not the most interesting to expand, or is just nothing for sale in those areas? How should we look at those?
The question there is our acquisition sort of record in our villages. Well, actually, I think if we looked at Carnaby, there's probably not an awful lot to buy around there, but actually our other interests in Berwick Street are extending beyond the boundary we started with, and actually some of the acquisitions are sort of moving towards Carnaby. It's just opportunistic. I mean, we look at everything that comes along. A lot of the acquisitions have been in Covent Garden of late, but we picked up things in Chinatown. If you'd asked us 2 or 3 years ago, we'd say, well, Chinatown's pretty complete. There's nothing left to buy. But actually, you know, amazingly, things have come. You know, the Chinese have started sellers, a generational change in families, and actually families don't want to be in the restaurant business anymore. They know Sharp is there to give them some money very quickly if they choose to move on. So I think it's completely unpredictable, really, and there's no particular strategy here. But you'll see the acquisitions in Soho and not actually that far from Carnaby. We just pick up what comes along.
We are actively canvassing as well, so we do know where we want to invest. But as Brian says, if somebody doesn't want to sell, you can't force them to sell. But at any time, we are looking at a number of opportunities, and indeed now we've got a number of things that we're hoping to buy.
Thank you.
Michael Burr, Spirito Santo. You talked about a change in implementation rather than a change in strategy. I was just wondering what that might mean in terms of any specific initiatives in the next couple of years.
Well, if you've seen things evolve over the last couple of years, I mean,
few years back we wouldn't have ever talked about street improvements, working with Westminster on improving things. We get more and more involved in marketing strategies now, marketing campaigns. We're a very active member of the West End Marketing Alliance. Because again, a number of us owners in the West End believe we have to work together to promote the West End. It's not without its challenges, but we never forget that. In the way we look at our buildings, that evolves over time. I think possibly for some of our carnival projects, we're going back and looking at things we did maybe 10 years ago, because actually we find better ways of reconfiguring buildings, and it's meeting the demands of our customers, our tenants. Sort of we do our shopping evenings. It's all about promotion, making in a very competitive world, keeping these areas in front of people's minds, so we don't take it for granted. It's everything, really. Our focus on restaurants is changing. You know, we don't talk about pubs specifically in any of our presentations, but obviously we see those as great long-term opportunities to bring change. It's the first chance people have had to get a hold of these buildings, and actually we can integrate them with things we own around. So it is constantly evolving. We're always looking at more new things.
We benefit from what other people do. I mean, the Crown Estate's enormous development at the bottom end of Regent Street, which is nearing completion, will transform that part, which actually is the entry to Berwick Street and going north. A very, very major investment which benefits our own holdings.
And the second question, you just touched on broadening out the investment remit in Berwick Street to include Soho. What's the extent of the opportunities outside of Berwick Street in that Soho portfolio?
Simon? There are lots of opportunities, but I think we wouldn't want to give too many secrets away about actually where we are looking, but there are good opportunities.
And they follow the very traditional Shaftesbury approach of finding buildings which are quite run down. You know, that's where we like to start with. Suddenly buying prime in those sort of areas, because that's not what we're about. But there's an awful lot of things around there that are considerably interesting.
We do know what we want to buy.
Peter Cartwright from Fisk. Do you have any sense from your tenants that the customer mix is changing already? Presumably less UK and more overseas.
Tom, what's your view on that?
I don't think we've noticed any perceptible change. I mean, the villages have different characteristics. Carnaby is predominantly, it's a youth fashion, but it's also a lot more tourist-driven. Seven Dials is probably appeals more to the Londoner. But that's been a characteristic for a while. I don't think we've seen any noticeable change over the last year or so.
But again, the visitor market in London is always changing. If you'd have gone back to the early 1990s, it was all about Japanese and Americans. Well, they've sort of faded away. They're not so important. It is about Europeans at the moment. You know, there's huge waves of wealthy people outside of what's called the Western world, Europe and America, who actually see London as a great destination to come to. I mean, crikey, we're going to see enough advertising for London next year. I mean, global event. So, you know, if that doesn't bring more people from more places across the world, I don't know what will. So
what is a Londoner anyway?
Well, I am actually. I was born here, but I'm probably the only person in the room.
London is a multinational city, really. And leaving aside the visitors who come by Eurostar or by air or by road, I mean, there are thousands of foreigners who actually live in London and work in London.
But I think it's important for us to sort of identify who are the next phase of people coming. I mean, the Russians are coming. And in fact, our PR agency yesterday gave us a 15-minute PR piece solely on Carnaby, which goes out to 6 million people in Russia. So I can't understand Russian, but I'm sure it's very positive. And of course, the Chinese as well. We think there's going to be a big influx of Chinese once the visa requirements are sorted.
And the biggest change, as far as Chinese are concerned, are the visa. In continental Europe gets about six times the number of visits from China than we do, mainly because they have a single passport throughout the Schengen area. And actually the visa for Britain is quite expensive and quite difficult to achieve, long-form, incomprehensible to many Chinese.
Can I follow up? Any comments on suggestions of the proposed joint venture with Soho Estates?
Soho Estates, we're good neighbours. We work with them. They're part of our work we do in promoting the West End and making Soho a nicer, safer place. We're just good neighbours. We expect people to want to hold on to very valuable assets in the West End of London. They've managed to sort out their family affairs. It's not up for us to say what their long-term aspirations are, but they certainly know where to find us. We're just across the garden wall.
Yeah, Nick Webb from Exxon BNP Paribas. Just in terms of the investment market, you talked about the absence of sellers, but are you finding that there are even more buyers than usual competing for the kind of assets that you're interested in, and particularly are there more coming from overseas as well?
We certainly work in a very competitive environment when it comes to acquisitions. It's always been that way, really. London's prosperity is apparent to people from lots of places on this planet. Whatever you think about the UK, it's politically stable, and it's a safe place to invest in. And the great sort of unsettled conditions are across much of the world, not just financial but political. I think London, a lot of people do see London as a safe haven. We're buying in fairly small lot sizes, so you're talking about not institutional purchases, but wealthy overseas people are perhaps looking for a safe home for their money. We saw our EA Shaw the other day, they're our principal residential agent in Covent Garden. They said at the moment the biggest demand for residential throughout Covent Garden is from, not surprisingly, Greeks, Spanish, Portuguese and Italians, who are desperately getting their euros out from under the mattress, I guess, and trying to find a safe home in London. So these people are always around, and so it is quite challenging when they're perhaps buying on not strictly economic ground. But we say, local market knowledge is staying ahead of the game. These people are always there. But of course they don't buy with the sort of angles that Shaftesbury had, our particular knowledge and our other ownerships. Buildings do have a particular value for us, and for us they unlock assets all around. It's not just that one standalone building for us. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle, really. Each piece for us is another bit of the jigsaw, and it just unlocks pieces all around. And we are able to take it. Thank you. Any more questions in the room? Thank you. Now if we could ask if there are any questions from those who have been listening on the dial-in.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your keypad. If you wish to withdraw the question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. Our first question comes from Robert Duncan from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Morning, gents. Just two questions from me, please. The first is, can you give an indication of the percentage of your leases which are subject to landlord breaks? Obviously, you talk about the five-year average weighted unexpired lease term. I'm just interested to know how much you can effectively get out of and therefore drive rental growth in the absence, well, just in general. And the second one is, can you give an indication of the capital growth split by shops and restaurants as opposed to by the different villages? Thanks.
Well, the first question there was about landlord lease breaks and actually can we accelerate tenant change. Well, we have a whole range of leases in our portfolio. We start with the most extreme. We've got restaurants who generally want to take 25-year leases, got substantial unexpired terms on our leases there, and those leases do not have any breaks at all for the tenant or the landlord. And I think you're fully aware of why that situation exists. It's the asset is very valuable for the tenant. So that's not a situation where we can immediately accelerate change, but we do benefit from considerable demand and the fact that these leases change hands for substantial amounts of money. In our retail portfolio, we have leases of varying length, so you can come and take a unit from us for 6 months if we want to give you a try and you want to give it a try. Smaller shop leases will be 3 years anyway. Bigger, longer leases will be 5 or 10, perhaps with a break during that period. So there are lots of different ways of doing this. Tenants move on as much as the landlord. Tenants don't always want to stay put and say the world of fashion moves on. Some people keep up, others get left behind. So you pick up the ones that get left behind. It's a real mixed bag. These are not long-term institutional leases generally. Rent reviews are a great opportunity for the struggling to come forward and say, actually, we can't meet the rent. at that point, if demand is there, we bring other people in. You know, we actually encourage people to hand back the keys if they're not happy in our villages, because we have others who are desperate to get in there. Sorry, your other point was...
It was just on, can you split, the capital growth between shops and restaurants as opposed to sort of by the individual villages? Just give an indication of where the key growth was seen in the period.
Well, you'll appreciate that all of our buildings are mixed-use buildings and our villages are pretty much valued as a whole by the valuers. They look at them, they lot the buildings, the uses, and they look at the overall cash flows from our villages where the use is slightly less of concern to them. So I'm afraid to answer your question. No, we don't provide that, or we're unable to provide that sort of breakdown, really. But I think if you take the fairly uniform average over a couple of years growth in our villages, it's, all those uses contribute in different ways. Simon, Tom, I don't know whether you see that differently at all.
No, I think it is across the board. And
Yes, I mean, there's particular elements. Retail is much more easy to identify because it's in a way, it's almost a separate part of our building. You know, we've seen rents and values up 10%, but actually when you get down to the lower floor mix there, it's really very, very difficult to identify.
The weakest element has been office, really.
It's the most volatile element. Offices always are. You know, we have lots of smaller offices within the portfolio and shorter leases. And you know, in tough times, you know, this is why we don't hang on to them. Why try and find another use for them? Smaller tenants go in tougher times. Smaller tenants are much more resilient. You know, those tenants going may give us an opportunity to accelerate our residential conversions or extending the other commercial uses in the building.
Okay.
Thank you. Just to remind all participants that if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. If you wish to cancel your question, please press 02. There will be a further pause while the questions are being registered.
I think silence suggests that perhaps there are no more questions. So it is approaching 10:30. So thank you very much for coming along this morning. You'll see the material on your chair is a bit less than usual, but actually as you leave at the back of the room, we have our usual pack of maps and information about the villages. So do pick those up as you leave today. As ever, although we see less of Jonathan these days, the tours continue. I've been around long enough just about to be able to get round the portfolio without getting lost. Simon and Tom are always available. So I encourage you to come round, and we encourage your clients come round as well, but don't feel you have to write anything like Dr. Johnson. Come and enjoy it. Thank you very much, everybody.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.